Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to your Mana X Music Broadcast. As always, I'm your friendly neighborhood support main, Ross Johnson, bringing you the hottest EDM and gaming news. But tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is a very special night because I have a very special guest with me here for an interview. You want to introduce yourself?
Hey there, I'm Zach Mady. I'm the Vice President for SNC Esports. I am also the starting support for the SNC League of Legends team.
Another support main. Nice to see you. Trying times, no matter what game a support main is.
Always.
It's always an experience. So, let's get into this. Now, we're both very passionate about gaming, but I gotta ask the question, where does that story begin? How do you get into gaming? What's the memory? The first game you got into or how it all started?
So for me, I remember the first game that I ever personally owned was Pokemon Sapphire. My cousins were both really avid Pokemon fans growing up. And my parents, didn't really, I was still really young. They didn't want to get me games yet. But I was so adamant about getting Pokemon Sapphire for my birthday. I ended up getting it. And from then, I was just kind of hooked, For years, it was just Pokemon, and then I'd say when I really, really got into gaming, it was Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. That was the first actual game that I just, absolutely fell in love with and just played for hours and hours and hours for, the entire year that it came out. And it got me into the, yearly Call of Duty cycle, and from there, it just kind of took off.
So what were you playing MW3 on at the time?
Xbox 360 at the time.
Xbox 360. Console you hear a lot of love and a lot of hate for. Of course, the Model 1's got the lovely Red Ring of Death 100% failure rate, but...
I had the Ring of Death once, and I actually got through it, so...
You got through the Red Ring of Death.
I got through the Red Ring of Death. It was insane. I was very scared for a bit. As a kid, you're looking up all those YouTube videos of the Red Ring of Death, you're oh my god, I'm never going to be able to play on my Xbox 360 anymore. Well... Let it sit for a couple days, and it actually worked.
My parents were very anti-gaming, so I never had a 360. Yep. I had a Nintendo 64 and an original Xbox.
Wow.
And the next console I got, and the last console I ever got after that from my parents was a Wii, and then I jumped to the Nintendo Switch. So, nice. Other than PC gaming, my console history is so spotty, especially with Xbox. So... The game that, like you said, the game that you play for SNC Esports is League, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm a complete outsider to League of Legends. I'm sure some of our listeners will also be complete outsiders. So, what's League? How does it work?
So, League of Legends is a MOBA. It's a massive online battle arena. It's this 5v5 game. It's kind of taken from an RTS kind of perspective, that top down, looking at this set map. And the idea is you're kind of pushing, you as a team of five are trying to push across the map and destroy in your enemy's base what's called their nexus. It's kind of, that finishing point for saying that you win this team. I know that other people have described it as kind of like capture the flag, but it's kind of like this one-sided capture the flag where, you don't have to pull it back to your base. You push through to the enemy's base, conquer it, and then you win the game. But what makes it really, a skillful game is that there's over 100 different champions in the game.
Over 100.
I think it's over, it's closer to 140 now, something like that, that all have their unique individual abilities, different item paths you have to think about, and the different compositions that you can craft with those champions. So it becomes, this game that's not just, you think of Overwatch where there's only so many set combinations.
Right, that's what was coming to my mind.
But you have League where there's this large amount of combinations that you have to consider going into each and every game.
It seems like it can get very counter-heavy from what it sounds like. Mm-hmm. Like attempting to counter, okay, they have champion X, I know champion Y counters it, so I'm going to run champion Y.
In most esports, you hear about the metagame a lot. And I'd say for League, it has one of the most complex and diverse metagames.
Sounds like it.
The amount of back-end work that coaches have to do for this esport is insane. And, coming from my stance as not just being, a starting player, we don't have the whole coaching staff that other colleges do. We have a couple people that are standing in as our coaches. But we as the players still have to do a lot of that work. And a lot of what I do is, that background prep work, trying to think of, okay, this team that we're going to be against is proficient on these champs, you know, what would be the best draft that we could have going into a game against them?
Yeah.
And then, you know, that takes hours of work. It takes, you know, film review, looking at any games that we can find to that team, and really trying to piece together what is going to be our best option for the game on that, you know, given weekend.
So, like, when you talk about these over 100 champions, what categories are they divided into? Like, is there support, attack, mm-hmm. defense?
So, in League, there's different positions that we have. So, we can start, there's the top lane, which is going to be, you know, kind of like a bruiser, tank slash bruiser fighter kind of champs. Then you have the jungle, which goes around from one side of the map to the other, just clearing the camps that are in the jungle. Then you have the mid lane, which is kind of the carry position most of the time, where it's going to be kind of like a game controlling position. You know, it's going to be looking to set up team fights. And then you have the bot lane, which is your AD carry, which is supposed to be the champion that's going to be doing the most amount of damage in the game.
Okay.
And it might take a little bit longer to get to your power spike where you're going to be able to do that damage, but it's one of the most skilled positions in the game. And then there's the support, who is doing the work for, you know, setting up team fights, just giving your teammates the best abilities that they can do in a given game.
Yeah, I mean, it's so are all the games played on one map? I've heard the name Summoner's Rift thrown mm-hmm. around before.
Yeah, so in competitive League, it's only played on Summoner's Rift. It's only 5v5. There are a few other game modes, but those are kind of just for fun, you know, just for casual,
right,
and learning the game.
Other things like Deathmatch, Capture the Flag. I'm just going off of an Overwatch perspective again, but
yeah, you know, we just have those kind of fun game modes. But you know, when you're trying to, when you're going to play League and you're going to play it competitively, it's always on the Rift.
Always on the I've heard we'll see you on the Rift before. Mm-hmm. Now, like I said, you said League has a lot of casual players, and of course League is massive competitively. What's the competitive scene like as we're starting to get into it as a school? Like, what is competitive League like? Is it very serious? Can it get toxic? Like, what's the atmosphere?
So there's a couple different levels there. So the in-game ranked mode, right, you know, when it's you personally against any other player on your server, right? You know, the North America server gets a lot of grief. We're kind of like the trolley server, you know. South Korea is one of the most, is like the most
elite,
competitive.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're the elites. They take it very seriously in every game that they play. North America, we're more relaxed, and it gets a little bit toxic in just, you know, your everyday kind of game. But when you look at the actual competitive structure, where we're going from just that, you know, how good am I to the how good am I on a team? We see the same stratification that you see in traditional sports, which is the really interesting thing looking at League compared to any other esport right now, is that League is really starting to develop where it has high school leagues, has collegiate leagues, has the professional league that already has ingrained into it its own academy system, which serves as kind of like the secondary scene for aspiring professionals.
Yeah. See, one of the things that I find most intriguing with League is, like you talked about before when you got into Call of Duty, every year there's a new mm-hmm. game, there's a new cycle. League seems like it's been around forever at this point. The game is just not going away. Yeah. It's static for, I don't know how many years now, almost 10, I believe.
Yeah,
like,
I can't remember exactly when the beta came out, but I know that we're going into Season 9 for the actual ranked seasons. And I think that's, or at least 9 years worth of world championships, which I think is, on an esports scale, very, very impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it's a testament to just the game that, like, oh, we don't need to upgrade graphics, or we don't need to switch, like, the game is so fundamentally sound that it doesn't need any sort of flashy new gimmicks or features. Mm-hmm. It can just be League, and I think that also allows people to take the time they need. Like, even if it takes you 3 or 4 years to get to that level in League, League is in a way kind of static. It's just mm-hmm. very open for anyone to join, and it doesn't look like it's going anywhere anytime soon. And I think League is one of the best models. I want to throw some stats at you about, like, growth. So the World Championship for League is a massive event. So in 2011, there were 1.7 million viewers for the League World Championship. 2012, that number was 8.2 million viewers. In 2013, that had jumped to 32 million viewers, and it has not slowed down since. I mean, League is the esport, it seems, above all others.
In terms of viewership and in terms of player numbers, I would say so, yes.
It's certainly dominant. I mean, that in 2013, when I talk about 32 million people viewing, the Staples Center, a real stadium in LA, sold out in an hour after tickets went live for the League World Championship. So when you talk about, like, sports super fans, we've got esports super fans here. So, also about League, how's the team doing?
So, our team hasn't really played a game yet. We had our first week of the regular season, but the team that we were supposed to be facing ended up not having a full roster. I don't know exactly what happened, but there might have been miscommunication between their coach and their captain, but when it came to, you know, right before game day, they were only sitting at 4 to 5 players on the roster. And the league ended up having to come in and say, like, you know, you had an entire week to get back to us, didn't get to us, so we're going to have to give you the loss on this. And, you know, everyone on our team kind of, like, was like, okay, you know, a win's a win, but at the same time, it's another opportunity to practice as a team. You know, we're college kids, we're limited on time, so our practices, you know, we had to cram a lot into a very short amount of time. And I'd say our practices have been very fruitful lately. We've had some really good learning experiences. We've also had some really just good motivating moments as well. So going into this week, I think we're at a good spot. This weekend we're against Illinois Wesleyan University, one of the top 15 teams in our division, you know, at least from preseason rankings, and you know, I think it's going to be a good game. You know, we're matching up to them, you know, at least looking at how each lane is matching up, I think it's going to be a really close game. I think that's really exciting for us to be able to actually go into a match and say, this is going to come down to how we play this game. It's not just going to be a stomp. It's not going to, you know, either way, it's not like we're going in and we're like, you know, a straight shot underdog. And we're not going in as the, you know, the expected team to win. This is going to be a really close series for us. And I think that's really good for everyone on the team because win or lose, it's going to be one of the best learning experiences that we have as a relatively new roster.
So you mentioned that you guys have a lot to cram in with a week. What's the life of a collegiate esports or league player right now? How many hours a week? How are the practices?
So practices-wise, you know, for our set schedule, we practice Monday nights from 7 to 10 and Wednesday nights from 7 to 10. But that's just, you know, given, like, these are our set times that we will be against other colleges that would like to scrimmage us. Throughout the week, though, pretty much any free time that we have, we dedicate it to either playing solo queue on our own or dual wing with anyone that's on, or you know, playing as a full team if everyone just happens to be on. It doesn't happen too often, but, you know, we try our best to play with each other as much as we can because any sort of interaction with each other is good. Building up team synergy is one of the most important things in League of Legends. So, you know, I live...
Sounds like it.
You know, my roommate is I played support, and my roommate is the AD carry. You know, we're in the same lane, we're in the same room, we're constantly dealing with each other, and it's helped a lot for us to be able to develop, you know, synergy and being able to understand what each other wants to do in a game just based on us being able to interact on every single day. And being able to see our teammates, you know, whether it be if we're, you know, we've been planning team dinners and, like, viewing the LCS together and stuff like that, just so we can build up camaraderie with each other. For the amount of time I'd say we put in each week, for me, especially with how much I have to do, you know, work with our coaches that, you know, they're really our friends that want to help us succeed. The amount of time that I put in addition, I'd say that I put in anywhere from 12 to 16 hours. You know, I think 20 hours for last week's is where I, you know, kind of capped out because I had a bit more time. But I'd say on an average week, I'd probably put in anywhere from 12 to 16 hours prep work for a weekend's game.
So how many people do you have, like, active, ready for matches on the team? Like, do you just have the 5, or do you have, like, 8 or 9, and you're switching members in and out?
So we currently have 7 on our active roster. And really, you know, it just comes down to how many people want to be a part of the team. We're allowed to have as many people on our roster as we want. It's just a matter of who is on the, you know, active lineup for that weekend, which we can only have six. Okay. On a given weekend, we can only have six players, five being your starting roster, and then one being a substitute.
Okay.
But we can adjust as needed, you know, depending on how that week's practices go or how the meta shifts from patch to patch. We get to really decide and micromanage who we want for a certain situation in what game. Oh, which is really nice because, you know, we started the season with just six. We just added on a seventh, and it's, you know, another voice is amazing to have because more people will notice little different things that are going wrong in the team's gameplay. And it helps a lot because it's another just way to look back and reflect on your scrims. You know, when we do VOD reviews, we're looking for even the tiniest mistakes.
Oh, yeah. Because
every game of League, you know, the average game is like 30 minutes, 35 minutes. But every second counts. Every, like, you know, especially for our jungler, like, every little movement he makes on the map counts. There's no taking back the last second where you're like, oh, I should have went and done this camp or that camp. Or, you know, for me, I should have went and warded this at this moment. Like, these little micro things that a lot of people wouldn't necessarily notice when they're watching a professional game really add up.
I'm sure they do. I mean, and it seems like there really is no time for indecision when you're in one of these matches. Like, you got to commit to your path, and you have to have your team commit with you. If you have a fractured team, it seems like that there's just no chance. I mean, that's why the reputation that I hear from League a lot is that it can be a very, like, people say it's a toxic community of people who are just, excuse my language, but, like, fractured tryhards who have just, you know, are just angry. And, like, I don't want that mentality to discourage people from getting into League. No. Because it seems like that if you're willing to put in the effort and find people willing to put in the effort, League is a great experience.
Yeah. Honestly, it's just like any other sport. No, sport. I was a three sport athlete in high school, and whether it be an individual sport like wrestling or football, right? Your teammates are always going to have something to say. And I think, you know, taking your mindset when you're actually playing with a team of five rather than, you know, there's a big difference between playing as just yourself in a solo queue game or playing as five in a collegiate game. And I think the difference that you'll see is when you're actually working with people that you know that you have to go play with the next day, the next week, it's a lot different than going to a game with someone that you probably will never match up with again.
Yeah.
And I think that's where you see a lot of people get more quote-unquote toxic. But in the actual collegiate scene, I'd say it is one of the best experiences that I've had in my life due to the interactions that I've had within my teams and also with other teams. You know, some of the people that I've, you know, I've just scrimmed with, you know, I talk to them on a daily basis, you know, because I'm like, you know, we're trying to see how each team is doing. We're trying to set up, you know, more scrims and just talking casually. You know, like it is a really welcoming community. It might just be that's how the collegiate scene is, but I think I'd like to think that even just, you know, the amateur scene in League of Legends is quite the same.
Yeah, you would definitely hope. I mean, again, the game isn't going anywhere anytime soon, but any game needs to stay growing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, that's the problem, say, with Overwatch these days, is now Overwatch has gotten the reputation of being a very toxic game. Personally, while I've had some toxic matches, I don't get that vibe, but I see a lot of players either leaving the game or turning away, and it definitely scares me about the future of Overwatch. Now, there was a word that you used earlier, sport, and I'm going to use that word to kind of pivot into the next part of this interview. Do people understand, like, how hard it is to actually play competitive video games and how much skill and time and devotion goes into it? Like, you hear all those things with, say, like, a football team, oh, they're drilling every night, they're exemplary, like, they're, you know, almost icons. But then it seems like society doesn't see esports players the same way. Do people really get it?
Some people do, some people don't, is the way to look at it, you know? We're at kind of like this, you know, use the word pivot. Esports is at this pivotal point right now where it's going to be seen, is this an actual industry or is this just a fad? You see money being pumped in by the billions. It is now over a $1 billion industry. But is there a good ROI? Who knows? But what we can say is that this is something that not just one generation, but, you know, bridging into a multi-generation thing right now. We can see that people are taking it serious. The people who are into it are taking it serious.
Yeah.
The demographic now ranging from probably like 10 years old to 26, 27. That whole group.
Yeah, are about 14 to 34 is the prime range for esports fans right now.
That group of people are taking it to the utmost seriousness. It is our generation that is saying, like, this is what we enjoy doing. We love competing in this fashion, right? You know, you're not going to look at people who are into skateboarding, right? You know, when that was, you know, when the extreme sports were on the rise, you know, the 80s and 90s.
The X Games.
And people were like, oh, this isn't going to be a thing. And, you know, it's still a thing to this day. Even though it might not be the most popular in terms of sports because, you know, it's a different kind of structure, it's still a thing. And it's, you know what, it's what those kids back when they were teenagers, you know, if they said, this is what I really want to do, they went and did it. It's the same thing that you saw with esports. I come from a very interesting background where my first esport was Call of Duty. Like, and I was infatuated after I saw the Call of Duty World Championship, the first one, for Black Ops 2.
Players.
And I'm like, wow, that looks, A, really fun, and B, it's, you know, the kind of, it's the same feeling that I got when, you know, I won my first wrestling tournament. You know, like I could see the look on their face when they lifted that trophy, and I'm like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
And so I competed in Call of Duty for a couple of years, but, and that's where I ran into, you know, this issue, where is it a real sport? My mom and my stepdad weren't the biggest fans of what I wanted to do. They didn't really understand it. You know, I wanted to go to a couple of local Call of Duty tournaments with some friends. Never was allowed. I wanted to play online tournaments, you know, put my, you know, money that I had into that. Never was allowed to. So I just kind of sat there stalled for a couple of years. And then it wasn't, you know, during that time stalling is when I made the jump to League. And that's where I knew that I found something that I would really enjoy, because I knew, you know, I was starting fresh in a new game that I, you know, it was a completely new genre. I never touched keyboard and mouse before League. And it was a nice learning experience. And I knew that I needed to find something that I could succeed in college. And I knew that League was going to be that premier game to jump into. And I did. And I absolutely loved it. And that's where people start to look at League and they're like, this is, you know, we can see this, there's skill involved. The fans are there. The atmosphere is there. The structure is there. I'd say really, you know, when you look at it from a more philosophical standpoint, the qualities that make sports are the same that make esports for people.
I mean, you said, like, you've got skill, you've got fans, you've got structure, you've got the attitude. Those are the things that make, say, you know, we got the Super Bowl coming up. That's what makes the Super Bowl. It's all those factors that we see in traditional sports. If we're seeing them in esports, then what's the problem?
Yeah, I mean, for me, the way I've always described it to people is that, you know, it doesn't really matter what you call it. It's still under, you know, this overarching umbrella that'd be competition. And I don't think that you need something to be athletic to be a competition. It doesn't really matter if you call it a sport, an e-sport, whatever. You know, they have the same elements in each other that draw people to it. I think from, you know, like a sociological standpoint, that's the most important thing, is what is drawing communities together?
Yeah. One of the things that I want to talk about tonight is, like, you and I, we're both, you know, in the gaming crowd. We've been in the gaming crowd our entire lives. We grew up in this generation that's so tech savvy. But there's, of course, an older generation, our parents and, you know, others, who don't really understand, like you were saying. I want to go through some clips tonight, specifically some media clips that are very anti-esports, and I think just don't understand. And I'd like to hear some of your thoughts on these clips. So, we are going to launch into the first one. This is a very controversial clip from 2015 from Jimmy Kimmel Live, where he was reporting on YouTube's new streaming service for Let's Players, which gaming is a massive industry, you know, for YouTube. It makes them a ton of money. This video is from 2015, and it gives some of Jimmy's thoughts on YouTube gaming.
network yesterday where you can watch other people play video games. For real, let the whole network. It's called the We Should All Be Very Ashamed of Ourselves for Failing as Parents channel. Actually, it's called YouTube Gaming, and I don't get that. To me, you know, watching another person play video games is like going to a restaurant and having someone eat your food for you. Just if you like them, play them. But I guess I'm getting old. When I was a kid, you only watched other kids play video games when you ran out of quarters, and then you'd stand there. But apparently, there's big money in this. And one of the top video game players is a guy named PewDiePie. He reportedly makes $4 million a year doing this, which is funny because that is precisely how much you would have to pay me to sit through one of those videos of somebody. But if you're a video game player who likes to watch other video game players play video, well, the problem is, where does it end?
YouTube is...
Just going to stop it there. It goes into a bit of a comedic sketch. Just a bit of context. This video has about 1.6 million views. Out of those views, it has 14,000 likes and about 186,000 dislikes, which seems like people have some strong opinions, but let's hear yours.
So, I've seen this clip before, and, you know, I honestly love Jimmy Kimmel. I think he's a great night show host, but this is one of the things where I'm just thinking, like, what are you actually talking about? Like, I felt like he was really just trying to go for, you know, a quick jab because his audience isn't the audience that YouTube has.
Yeah.
Right? You know, this is going to, you know, make him a quick buck. It's going to, you know, get him some, you know, maybe get some likes on YouTube. But, like, you know, his core fan base that's watching him late at night, you know, oh, they're going to get a nice kick out of this. I think that really, you know, saying that gaming or watching a gaming video is, you know, one step removed from human activity, it just doesn't make sense. Because it's not that, you know, it's just a person watching a video. It's a person that is interacting with a community of people watching that video. You're watching that video because you want to learn something about the game community that you are in. And if you're watching a Let's Play, you're doing it not just because you want to see the game being played. Maybe you don't have access to the funds to actually purchase the game. Maybe you heard from a friend that there's something really funny at this certain part of a game, but you don't want to play that whole game. Or maybe you just really enjoy the entertainment of the person that is publishing those videos.
See, I've heard this argument so many times when it comes to Let's Plays of, like, why watch someone play and talk about these video games when you can go and play them yourselves? I get that. But then you, you know, got everyone gathered on the TV to watch football every Sunday. It's like, why don't you go play TV yourself? It's because you find watching professionals entertaining, watching these people who can push themselves either to the very limit or make the game entertaining fun. Like, this mentality seems to be just so old and tired, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like when I was your age, we went outside and we played with our friends. It's like, I still do play with my friends. It's just that my friends in like, we can connect over this new medium. We don't have to, you know, do the things you did.
Yeah, I don't think it's, you know, a matter of necessarily not doing those old things. It's just something else that we can do.
Yeah.
Like, and I think one of the most interesting things about it is, you know, this isn't just YouTube gaming being its own section. This is looking at live streaming and how that works too. Why would people spend their time watching someone, you know, live streaming a game when they, you know, they could be doing the same thing? You know, it's not just learning, you know, especially for live streaming, it really is about the personality and connecting with that person, and not just that person, but the community they're a part of. At its core, gaming is about community.
Exactly. See, when you go through the rest of this video, he does basically a bit about, like, people and about people watching other people play video games. And all the people in his bit are single guys sitting alone on their couch with, you know, nothing better to do is basically what's hinted at. For me, it's the exact opposite. Gaming is what made me social. I think for most of us, it's a very social activity. Like, it's the opposite of, you know, sitting alone. It's not just us sitting alone not doing anything. It's us connecting with people. Like, my friend who goes to college in Minnesota, I can't, you know, go outside and throw the ball around with him, but I can jump onto a game of Overwatch and just play together, connect with other people.
And I think that's like one of the most important factors here is that for me personally, I've met some of my best friends in life and some of the best connections that I'll ever have through gaming.
Yeah.
And it's experience, you know, you get access to experiences that you never would have had if you weren't as in tuned with the gaming community.
Yeah, it's look, now this clip, of course, didn't exactly pertain to esports, but it was definitely seen as taking a jab at just the gaming community in general, because we see nothing wrong with, you know, watching someone else play a game. It seems like there's so much hypocrisy in these arguments that people just don't want to accept that a new form of media is really taking hold with this younger generation, again, the 14 to 34-year-olds. It seems like esports is really growing, but certain people don't really want to grow and just don't really understand. Now, like I said, this Jimmy Kimmel clip is absolutely infamous at this point. And a credit to Jimmy, he, even though he did make a few more videos making fun of gamers, he eventually sort of went back on his word and actually made an effort to bring gamers onto his show and try and understand and connect a community that he didn't understand and tried, you know, broker peace, which is a lot more than some of these people ever do. Like, I gotta give him credit for that, even though this clip is so infamous.
Yeah, I mean, this is 4 years old, you know. There's right. been a lot of time for the space to grow and actually show, you know, these figureheads like Jimmy Kimmel, like, this is actually something of value. Not just, you know, for the communities, but also for people like him.
Yeah, and a few of the other clips I'm going to show you are older, but I think it's good to show, like, how perception has changed. So in 2015, this was a massively popular video that I'm sure was on the trending tab, as most of Kimmel's people are, and for people not in the video game community, this probably influenced what they thought of gamers in a negative way. So, anything else we want to say about Jimmy here before we move on?
He's a pretty funny guy. This is just one of those stains in his career.
I got nothing against him, but again, 186th. That's 1,000 dislikes. That's quite a dislike like to dislike ratio there. It seems that people were not happy about this.
Don't ever anger the internet. The internet will lash back.
People just will never learn that lesson. The internet is much more powerful than you realize. So the next video I want to go on to is a guy named Colin Coward, who, if you're not familiar, is very involved in talking about traditional sports. He likes to talk about basketball. He likes to talk about football. He does not like to talk about video gaming. And I think we'll see that from this clip here.
Former employer, I went on the air and said I was going to leave if they ever signed a long-term contract with esports. Esports is basically electronic sports, meaning you televise people playing video games. Well, Turner Broadcasting, TBS, announced a partnership with IMG Thursday. They're going to bring competitive video gaming exclusively to their cable network, TBS, along with digital coverage. Super. East Coast epicenter for esports competitive gaming. It's a new league, which is yet to be named. They'll have televised tournaments twice a year that include a 10-week regular season, playoff, and championships. What I'm about to play for you is actual esports on television. Roll the tape.
We're just going to quick skip through this segment of him, just rolling a clip from Evo 2015. It's an incredible clip, but some very excited commentators. A lot of shouting in the clip, so we're just going to skip right over it to Colin's interpretation. Now, the clip is a championship clip, so he's going to be talking about the winner of a fighting game championship from here on out.
That is now going to be a league. That was the nerd equivalent of banned on the field, Cal Stanford.
It's a huge deal. Like, it's bigger than the Super Bowl in other countries.
Yeah, great. We also have play-by-play of the winner there, Spencer, as he left the event and went home. Here it is. There goes Spencer. He's leaving the event and walking across the street to his mom's house, where he still lives at 29. He goes over to the refrigerator, opens it up. He's got a hot pocket. Oh, yeah. Microwave next. Look at the cheese. Yeah, big night for Spencer. Now he's going upstairs to his room, a room where a girl has never entered. He sits down, look at that Star Wars collection, and goes to town on the Hot Pocket. There.
I mean, talk about disrespectful. We've talked about, like, how much time and effort that coaches, players, company, the passion that goes into esports, the energy, like, and then just to have, you know, someone completely invalidate that, not just the league, not just, like, the industry, but even the players who have put so much time and effort into getting to the top of their field, like, this stuff can just be so disheartening to see. And just a quick side note, he, of course, got some backlash. And the next two videos recommended after this one is Esports is for Booger Eaters and Colin Coward Refuses to Apologize to Esports Gamers. Any thoughts?
Oh, good old Colin Cowherd. So, honestly, I don't think this should ever be disheartening to anyone. This guy literally makes his living off invalidating other people. You know, I've watched him talk about every other sport, and it's just hilarious to see how, like, what his fan base, like, actually clutches to. I mean, this is what the people that watch him want. They want him to absolutely destroy someone else.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's that's, you know, him being, you know, good at marketing himself.
Oh, yeah.
But to take shots in this direction for esports was just not really well thought through, I don't think, because, I mean, you can see it. It's just low-quality work.
It really
is. You know,
he starts
talking about TBS starting E-League. E-League had nothing to do with, was that Guilty Gear?
That was in Evo 2015.
Well, yeah, that was Evo. I think it was Guilty Gear.
I think the game might have been that, yeah. But two completely unrelated
games. You know, unrelated games,
not
unrelated
the
scenes.
Game.
They don't even run on a similar track. You know, one's tournament-based, one's, like, actual league-based.
Right.
You know, it makes sense to run as a league. You know, it's, fighting games have always been, you know, more of this, you know, think of, like, a wrestling tournament. It's always been, like, that kind of a aesthetic to it.
Right. You rise up through the bracket. It's like, it's not, you know, team and strategy based. It's winning a series of 1v1s, raw skill, king of the hill sort of thing.
Yeah. And, you know, I love the commentary part because, you know, he's really just trying to validate an argument based on stereotype.
Right.
And that's just when you're going to stereotypes, you know, you're always going to make yourself look, you know, look like an idiot is the best way that I can put it. Like, you're not actually trying to put forth an argument. You know, you're not trying to say, like, oh, I'm going to say this isn't, you know, an athletic event, you know, or I'm not going to consider it in the same likes of football. You can have that argument. I'm okay with that. But when you're just going to sit here and say, oh, these are just a bunch of virgins that eat Hot Pockets all day.
I know.
Well, you know what? Thank you, Mr. Cowherd, because Matthew Nadeshot Hags and a couple other Fortnite streamers got some nice Hot Pocket sponsorships over the last couple years. Thank you for hooking up Hot Pockets with the esports community.
Gotta get the gamer fuel. I just, like, and the thing I find so ironic about this is, let's go back to the very first esports tournament of all time, which was a Quake tournament called Red Annihilation, where the winner of that tournament took home a Ferrari. And we're and if you look at prize pools today, it's multi-millions that these players are taking home. They're not living with their parents. A lot of the times, say with, like, the Overwatch League, they're getting salary and benefits and housing. Like, gaming isn't just, you know, some hobby for sad, lonely guys who are living out of their parents' basement. It is a legitimate career for these athletes, I would even use
that
term.
I mean, that clip's from 2015 as well.
Again.
Back then, you know, that's still kind of a less structured era of esports. But even then, we're seeing players have, you know, nice salaried positions.
It was definitely far
less. It was far less than what it is now. Right now, you're looking at, in North America for League of Legends, you're seeing six-digit contracts per year. We're seeing, you know, I think one of the, I think the top laner for Team Liquid was signed for $1 million. And that's North America. When you look at China or Korea, that's where you start getting bewildered with the amount of money that
you
is
have
being
like
put
the
in.
That South Korea, you've got like one of the first true masters, Faker, the legend, the god himself, as I've heard people refer to him, coming out of there and just like, even just like the effect that a player like Faker can have upon a whole generation, like, of really inspiring people to rise up and find the level of success that he's had. Like, it's just sort of like this myth, you know, about who gamers are. Mm-hmm. When so many people in the United States today identify as a gamer, like, I don't remember, but it's like almost 50% at this point. Like, to the point where not every gamer can be a lonely guy sitting in his mom's basement eating Hot Pockets. Gamers are diverse people who have, you know, lives outside of gaming. It's this stereotype is one that just gets me so frustrated.
Whether it be a hobby or you're actually looking to be professional, you know, you're going to see diversity. And I think that's honestly one of the best parts about esports in general is straight up the diversity that you see in it. That you don't see in some other sports.
Oh, yeah. Now, the final clip I want to go to is a very interesting one. Do you know who Rick Fox is, Zach?
Of course I do.
So, for anyone who doesn't know, Rick Fox is a pretty legendary athlete. He was an NBA superstar for several years, and he's still a very, very well-known athlete today. Rick Fox is something else, though, outside of just, you know, a retired athlete. He's an esports investor. He owns, I believe, a company within esports, and he's a passionate defender of the right of esports to be called and valued as a sport. Now, the clip that I want to play is one from Daily Television, The View. And this clip is one that's, again, infuriated a lot of people. Once again, it's an older clip, but I think it's a really interesting one because it shows us a traditional athlete defending this new medium of esports. So I'm just going to hit play.
Okay, whatever. Rick, you're an icon, NBA icon, but you were telling us that your 19-year-old son has made you feel differently about being an athlete? What do you mean?
He sure has. My son he didn't follow in my footsteps to become a professional athlete. He didn't play sports. There he is. He's a lot older than that right now. Yeah. But what he has been passionate about outside of his writing, he's a freshman in college, he's passionate about video gaming. And as I fought for many years in his youth to get him out the house and to not only enjoy his video games, but also create some balance in his life, I couldn't pull him away from the passion he had towards video games.
Yeah.
And recently, he educated me on the fact that now that he's in college, they're actually giving college scholarships for video gaming.
You're kidding.
And it's even gone to the point that now the government has acknowledged professional video gamers as athletes.
Right. And they've
first and foremost, I care about my son and his passion and his skill. They're digital athletes. They're professional digital athletes. I think about what it took for me to become a professional athlete. It took a lot of concentration, a lot of dedication, practice, preparation, stamina.
Right.
And the more I watched my son pursue this career, and the more I watched him introduce me to the world as it is, which is professional gaming.
Right.
They're sponsored. Yeah. They have careers. Yeah. They make hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah. Like a professional athlete such as yourself who works so hard physically is okay with that.
Are they thinking of it as an intellectual athletics?
You have to be intellectual to be a professional athlete. You have to be sharp intellectually.
Gaming is an intellectual.
As an intellectual athlete.
Because what
is
separates
what they
the...
mean?
I know. They are considered professional athletes.
My sons are diehard video game players.
Parents is going to shock
they
parents,
can't
but
run,
the ship,
they can't
the ship
jump, they can't do nothing. This is good news.
Because you say he has to do the same thing, you know, focus, dedication. You left out the physical part. What separates that from a person who goes to school to be an engineer? He's not an athlete. He needs focus, dedication, hard work, persistence. So why does it make him an athlete?
I think the trigger point is professional. Now, I'm not saying that every kid that picks up a video game is a professional gamer.
Right. So, right?
Not every person that picks up a basketball was a professional basketball player. There's a small percentage of people that have chosen that career path and that fall into that digital athletic category.
Years from now, we'd be biting our tongues right now.
I kind of think that's interesting. I think of it as, to me, because I love gaming. You know, I play my Diablo. I have all my stuff that I do. Right. And for me, it's a great focus, you know, it's lasering and you're there. But I don't know if athlete is the right word that I would go for.
You don't freak a sweat? I don't consider it a sport.
Oh, no, you do. You do.
I do Jeff Dance.
And I love this debate. I mean, we can do it. I created a show, House of Fox, that can air on Twin Galaxies Live.com.
You've just sent all these parents back who are trying to get their kids out the house. They're all set back.
Parents, I did not say that every kid can be a professional game.
So that's about where it ends. I gotta say, before we launch into any other conversation, Whoopi Goldberg plays Diablo. I think that's a fact that more people need to recognize 100%. And know in the world, because that is an incredible fact. I gotta say, I wonder what you thought about the Bethesda controversy recently with, you know, who needs Diablo 4? You guys have phones, right?
And then there goes Blizzard stock.
Why, Blizzard? Why are you doing this? All my favorite gaming companies, Bethesda and Blizzard, are just out the window these days. That's a conversation for another time, though. Any other reactions? I mean, there are a lot of quotes that come out of this one. Like, if you don't break a sweat, I don't consider it a sport.
So, like I said previously, like I don't think that the name matters.
Yeah.
Whether you call it sport, e-sport, whatever. I don't think that matters. What matters is what it is to the communities.
I think that's a good way of approaching it.
I mean, when we get stuck up on names and categories, we're literally fighting about nothing, right? And I think that's why this argument to me is so funny, right? You know, we're all looking for the same feeling. And I think when you go to any sport event or you go to an e-sport event, whether it be from either spectrum, as a fan, you're going there because you love the game, you love the atmosphere, and you love the team.
Yeah.
Same thing for sports. When you play, you're going there for the sense of accomplishment. When you win, you're going there to dedicate yourself to something that you want to get better at.
Absolutely.
You're entwining your life with something that you absolutely love and could not see yourself doing, or you could not see yourself in life doing anything else. I think for me, and you know, and as Rick Fox is putting, you know, you're truly trying to be a professional, and you know, it doesn't matter whether you're breaking a sweat or not. And I can attest to this. Yes, you are.
Oh,
maybe
yeah.
Not in the same physical sense, you know, as football, and you're not like completely breaking a sweat, but you know, there's the same physiological and neurological stimulation that you would have from a traditional sport. You still have very, very powerful reactions in you from that. And I can test that where, you know, in wrestling, I have the same feelings from that I have when I play League and in an intense situation. But I think one of the other more important things to note from this is just this, you know, push for wanting to have that set category for everything, because people like to have things organized.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm not going to name names, but, you know, someone even here on campus that, you know, I've dealt with and have a lot of respect for. But, you know, it's been referred to me, you know, having a conversation about having esports here, whether it be as a varsity program, you know, a varsity sport is how it was coined. It would never be a thing here because, it was a fun argument that I had, you know, trying to go through philosophically, how do we define sport or competition, yada, yada. But what honestly, at the end, what it ended up coming down to. So one of my favorite quotes that I've ever experienced while talking about esports is, you know, this quote, if you can drink a beer during it, it's not a sport. Which was honestly just one of the weirdest points that someone could ever make to me.
Because
I know plenty of people on a hockey team and on a football team that would love to beg to differ on that point.
I'm sure.
But, you know, it's a really faulty logic is what you're getting at, because, you know, you're trying to put this aha thing. But it doesn't really do anything, because when you look at, you know, some of the, you know, household sports, I'd say golf is one of them. Golf, you know, it's not the same
game.
The yellow gentleman's game. It's not the same as, say, football.
Yeah, you've got your khakis, your polo shirt, your sun hat.
But it's still a sport all the same. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, one of the things where I always like going back to. I think golf and esports have a lot in common. Really precision based. Esports take a little bit more endurance per se. But you know, it's still hitting on a lot of the same, you know, no matter what you're looking at in sports and esports, it's the same core concept being applied if you strip away everything.
I think that's what matters most.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons I wanted to show these videos of like certain media outlets and figures denouncing esports a few years ago is because I also want to spend our last few minutes together talking about how much things have changed and are changing now. In 2014, the president of ESPN was quoted as saying that there will never be video games on ESPN. I don't consider them, quotation marks, real sports. 5 years later, ESPN has dedicated channels to streaming video game tournaments, talking about it, and things like that. I mean, I think we're starting to see, I mean, more than starting to see, that there is definite change in the wind when it comes to esports. Mm-hmm. Like, just quick flashing back to this time in 2015 when some of these videos came for, League of Legends had over 36 million viewers for the World Final that year. In comparison, the NBA Finals had 23 million, and the World Series had 17 million. Those are two, you know, traditional, you got America's pastime, you've got, like, basketball, like where Rick Fox is coming for, and then you see esports towering over both of those. And now we're starting to see, finally, that some bigger corporations are accepting esports. Like, according to the Newzoo, which is a company that sort of monitors business within esports, by 2020, the industry is going to be worth about $1.5 billion. Now, like, when you compare that to, say, like, the NFL, it's not that big. But what matters, I think, is how fast esports is growing. I mean, you can probably attest to that, seeing as how you're trying to get the program kicked up here.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, it's something that esports is really, really known for is how quickly it has evolved. And I think part of that has to do with how connected it is across the world. You know, we've seen football, right? It's America's like number one sport, but you don't really see it too many other places.
Yep.
League of Legends is played professionally.
Everywhere.
It has 13 different professional leagues across a multitude of different countries and continents.
Yep.
And I think that's, you know, one of the really big drawing powers is that you don't just have these local rivalries. You have worldwide rivalries.
You've got,
you know, it's a lot like
North
soccer.
America versus South Korea.
I love soccer because it has these storylines that, you know, are tied across, you know, across the pond, as one might say. I also think that one of the nice things to see, like, is the grassroots part of it. And I think that's, you know, especially at a collegiate level, that's what we've really been striving to build here at St. Norbert's. You know, there was a program or there was a club here. That was, you know, kind of just, you know, back in 2014, actually, back when things were really, really Wild West-ish, like, people didn't really know what was going on, what could happen. Now, especially with me and my group trying to start things up, we want it to be a lot more streamlined and a lot more focused on the community and what the community needs and how we can grow our community.
Yeah. I mean, it's just so interesting to see how this stuff is evolving and changing. And I think as time goes on, we're just going to have more and more to talk about. I mean, we're about a month away from an event that I'm looking forward to, the second season of the Overwatch League kicking off. I know that I'm among similar company, as both of us are supporters of the Houston Outlaws.
Go Outlaws.
Let's go Outlaws. If, for those of you who can't see, Zach is now flashing an Outlaws lanyard at me on top of an Outlaws coat that I've seen him walking around in. Believe me, when you want to talk about dedicated fans, you don't just find them in football, basketball, and all those other sports. Mm-hmm. You find the most dedicated fans, I'd argue, in esports. And that's why this industry is going nowhere but up.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's been really lovely having you on tonight, Zach. But before we wrap things up, I gotta ask, are there any shout-outs you want to make? Any things you want to let the people know about? Where they can watch your upcoming league games?
Sure. So, you know, shout-out to everyone that is looking forward to joining the organization we want to start on campus. You know, it'll be in the next couple weeks, so we'll be hopefully, you know, official with the school. Shout-out to my teammates. I know AJ, you're looking for a shout-out. Keep it up in the top lane. Keep grinding. And then, especially for this weekend, we're going to be having the first official Twitch stream.
Okay.
For the entire SNC Esports and Gaming Association in general, it'll be the first stream on our Twitch channel, which is Green Knight Esports. It's going to be our second match of the season. Our League of Legends team will be taking on Illinois Wesleyan University. They are one of the top teams in our division, and I think it'll be a really close match. Exciting. That'll be taking place at 3 p.m. Central Standard Time on twitch.tv/greenknightesports, 3 p.m. CST.
Any sort of social media that we can keep up to?
Have our Facebook page. All you gotta do is search SNC Esports and Gaming Association. Request to join. I'll get you in. You can also find us on Twitter at SNC_esports. Also, our YouTube is just like our Twitch, Green Knight Esports. Search either on Twitch or on YouTube. You'll find it just the same.
All right, I think that's going to be about it for the night. As always, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for tuning in to your weekly broadcast of Mana X Music. Until next time, this is Ross Johnson and Zach Meadie signing off.